We'll open up the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Wednesday, May 27th. Colleagues and members of the audience, and this is our next to last day of work sessions for Senate Business and Transportation. It's going to be a very busy, especially tomorrow. Most of those that we have on the agenda today, we're going to hear about with amendments. We do not have the fiscals on them yet, which means we'll have to carry them over after we hear about them till tomorrow. Now, tomorrow we have a very busy schedule as well, and we only have an hour and 50 minutes. When the clock strikes 12, the carriage turns into a pumpkin. So what I'm going to ask of the committee is that tomorrow especially be very diligent, because every second we use that isn't critical may cost a bill, and I don't want to do that if we can avoid it.
So if we have bills we want to kill, we can just fill it up.
Yeah, tomorrow. They will be at the end of the schedule.
I got a funny feeling he's got it in a priority so that we don't do that.
And I want to make an announcement right off the bat. So if you're here on House Bill 3099, will not be heard today. You'll be carried over till tomorrow. I will, however, begin now by opening up a work session on House Bill 2739. Mr. Stembridge, this is the auto dealership bill. If you could explain a little bit what we have here.
House Bill 2739, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you heard a couple weeks ago it modifies the motor vehicle inventory for which the dealers may be allowed fair and reasonable compensation upon termination, cancellation, non-renewal, or discontinuance of the franchise. And it increases the damage threshold for required disclosure to prospective purchasers of new motor vehicles from $500 to $1,000. You have the -A6 amendment, which requires manufacturers to provide within 30 days specific reasons why a dealer's franchise has been canceled and another franchise in the same market area was not canceled. It authorizes a dealer to contest the cancellation. It requires that canceled franchisees be offered the franchise if new franchises to be established or an existing franchise is to be expanded into the previous franchisee's market area. It authorizes the director of the Department of Consumer Business Services to take appropriate action to enforce franchise sales statutes. It encourages state contracting agencies to procure automobiles from dealers whose dealership agreements have been terminated as part of a bankruptcy or restructuring by an automobile manufacturer, and it declares an emergency effective upon passage. We do not have the fiscal and revenue for the -A6, but we do have the amendment, which has been distributed to the members of the committee and is available in the back of the room.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stembridge. So, colleagues, this is that bill we heard regarding our franchise, and I realize that in dealing especially with federal bankruptcy law, there's very little we can do, but I think this does two powerful things. Number one, it provides some help for dealers who may be disenfranchised, that they're going to have an opportunity to be able to re-engage in the business as a kind of a first right of refusal, and the thing with the Department of Administrative Services, even though our tight budget, we still are going to have vehicles that are going to have to be replaced, and this would allow those who have inventories as a result of this to get a preference to be able to have those vehicles moved. I would like to call Alex Laws, President of Timberline Dodge, forward. And I've asked Mr. Laws to come today. I commented on his particular dealership, but there's a number of dealerships, as you know, and Senator Virtue, you're an expert on this with your own, that have been impacted by this. And just for the benefit of the committee, Mr. Laws, briefly tell us about your experience and how we might be able to help. And just start with your identifying yourself and speak to us.
Thank you. I'm Alex Laws from Timberline Dodge, Chrysler Jeep, and Sprinter Van and Commercial Dodge Trucks in Portland. My family started in 1938 in Portland. We were a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. We are within the same block of our original store. And as of the recent filing by Chrysler, we were sent a letter that said we are no longer a dealer. And I encourage you to follow this amendment. I went back and just looked the other day. In 2008, our dealership delivered 1,087 new vehicles, 508 used vehicles. Our service and parts sales were $40,321,697. Our payroll is $2,353,718. Our payroll taxes are $328,679. We have 77 full-time employees. We are a viable business not only in the city of Portland, but in the state of Oregon. And it is unbelievable to me that in these times, that with orders from our federal government through this bankruptcy process, that we're allowed to be one of 789 stores told to shut your doors as of June 9th and go on your merry way. And the parts that you've purchased from us, you need to go ahead and just get rid of at whatever figure you can. Our parts department today on the retail side sits at just over $1 million. Mm-hmm. Those are paid for parts. Our vehicles are right at $4 million inventory. Those are paid for. And the manufacturer tells us that we're an expense to them going forward. We are not an expense. Every new car dealer must have an agreement to pay for their cars and pay for their parts, or they don't deliver them. It's that simple. And what we are asking for is several things. One, again, encouragement to pass these amendments for the future, for the business of the state of Oregon, and some protection for you new car dealers who are engaged in communities and engaged in the nonprofit side. And I think that you're exactly on the right direction. I'm sorry that we're not one who would be protected by this. But I think what you could do in the future is monumental. Our dealership, again, is being told to tell our employees to go find another job or become unemployed and call the bank up and tell them to come get the cars or sell them at whatever loss we can afford. So that's our story. It's a true story. I'm leaving here to go right back to continue our process of downsizing as fast as we can and figure out what we're going to do and where we're going to go. We were given 3 weeks. 3 weeks to shut down a business that's been around for 81 years. This would at least give us an opportunity, if they decide to come back into our marketplace, to have 60 days to decide whether we want to engage in business with these people again or not. And I think that's only right. I appreciate your time today. I appreciate you being able to see a face of a fourth generation auto dealership that is well known in the state and throughout the West. I'll add to our parts department is in the top 60 in the United States for distribution. So if you have any questions, I'd love to answer them. If not, I thank you for the work you've done and the work that you could do for the future.
Thank you, Mr. Laws. Questions for Mr. Laws? Yes, Senator Berger.
Well, I certainly want to extend to you my appreciation for the kind of work that your family have done over the years. You have been a backbone of Oregon economy, and particularly in the area in which you have served people and served them well. I think what has happened to you is just unconscionable. It is something that is unprecedented in this country. And I think for the manufacturers or any manufacturer to be able to do this without you having any kind of recourse whatsoever, my understanding is even those who have experienced not being cut on the list may be given a one-year franchise, which is a worthless franchise to right. talk about a year. And so I think that the problem still exists. I wonder if you would mind commenting on what has happened in our country as well, where your tax dollars, particularly people like you, who have paid federal taxes over many, many, many years, and that when the federal government extended the stimulus to the financial institutions, and they have failed to make loans to the people who now would come on your lot to buy your cars. Would you care? Or if you don't,
well,
if you're not comfortable, that's fine. But
Senator, it hasn't happened. The money that went out has not gone to help people borrow money for vehicles. And it's even with this engaging with it, the problem has become that you're a now marked business. I've done business with a newspaper as long as my family's been in 81 years been there. And I was called the other day and told that you're now on a cash-only basis because you're on this list. We had a bank call us up on Saturday. We are no expense to the bank. We send our consumers' credit apps to the bank for them to approve the loan and said, we're going to have to step away during this time. We can't do business with you because you're on the list. Now, why you would turn down business is beyond me. And why these funds that have been sent to the banks that are unaccountable, have not made it down to the consumer level to help vehicle sales. I have no idea, but they are not there. They are keeping the standards high on loans. The Beacon scores are staying high,
It
is not helping deliver new vehicles.
That's exactly right.
At all.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. The other thing is the trickle-down. I'm just thinking of all the businesses that your business does business with.
That's right.
That now don't have you to do business with. And so their employees will be impacted as well. If their business falls dramatically, they will have to lay off people, which adds more to the unemployment of your staff. So it is a very sad, sad commentary in the state of Oregon, but it's also sad across the country.
You're exactly right. The trickle-down effect, not only are the people that do our uniforms and that we contract the coffee companies that come in and supply our coffee, but the local Thai restaurant that's next to our operation and the hamburger place down the street, they are all being affected. And it's amazing that last Saturday, we got calls on Friday, and those people and our customers rallied over 200 people at our facility, not from our organizing, from their organizing, trying to understand why you take a tax-paying, profitable business and shut it down and tell us to eliminate our real estate in one of the toughest real estate markets for commercial real estate there is and go on our way. It makes no sense. And amendments like this that could help, I think, be the roadmap for other franchises. We are just the first one. You have restaurants that are franchises. You have parts houses that are franchises. And if they can go in and just null and void every state franchise across this country with the stroke of a pen, they will do whatever they'd like, obviously.
Well, 3,000 are going to join you with the General Motors franchises because that's their list.
That's right.
Is getting rid of 3,000.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? Well, Mr. Laws, thank you very much for coming down. And I don't know how much help this may be for you, but we're going to do what we can, and certainly looking forward. And I know your family will persevere and in some form may be able to take advantage of some of these things, because I know you're not going to just go run away. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you all for your work. We appreciate it.
Does anyone else like to comment on the -A6 amendment to House Bill 2739? Mr. Campbell, do you want to come forward?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here representing General Motors. The amendments that have been put before us, obviously, we have not had a chance to go through in detail. It does put a new series of restrictions on a really difficult situation. Of course, we sympathize with those dealerships, that especially those who have recently been given almost no notice, and the fact that their franchise agreements have been repealed as a result of the Chrysler's going through bankruptcy. The challenge we have as General Motors is a couple-fold. One, language that comes out that we need to make sure that our folks have a chance to look at this and vet it, and I realize you're under a very tight time frame, but oftentimes legislation that will have the impact that this have can have a lot of unforeseen consequences as a result of implementation. We will try and get an answer back to you as quickly as possible about these. I've had a chance to thumb through some of it, and I'm sure that there will be some things that don't sit well with General Motors, and I'll make sure that I get back to you on that. So we just wanted to raise the concern that this language, if it is something that causes a problem with my client, General Motors, we may end up having to oppose the bill, and I just wanted to give you that information up front. It in no means indicates that we have no concerns about what's happening to the dealers. We're dealing with a very difficult situation where General Motors is trying to meet its deadlines for making sure its reorganization allows it to continue to function as a business at all. And, of course, our franchisees suffer as a result of however that works out. Our hope is we'll be successful, And we won't have any more dealers that we're going to have to send those letters to indicating that we're restricting them. Now, fortunately for the state of Oregon, we were fortunate that not as many went out here as might have been anticipated, and actually Oregon did much better than others. But that does not mean that we haven't had dealerships throughout the country that are getting that letter indicating, we're sorry, but we're going to have to no longer do business with you as one of our trusted dealership because of the economic crisis that General Motors is going through. So with that, I just wanted to bring that to the committee's attention and understand that dealers are a very critical part of what we do. On the other hand, we also have to realize that General Motors and other manufacturers also are in the business of trying to keep their business stores open while people are not buying cars, and everyone is suffering as a result. So legislation that might benefit one could adversely affect another in a way that actually comes around in the end, and we don't want to see that happen without having a chance to look through it and make sure that we can give you knowledgeable and thoughtful comment back.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Senator Berger, you have that look about you'd like to ask a question.
I just want to be sure that Mr. Campbell heard the last presenter talking about the financial institutions. As long as the credit stays completely tight, the credit score ratings, people cannot buy cars that have been buying cars for the last 35 years without one bit of problem. They come in today. They cannot borrow any money at all, and that is not right. So there is a complication, and I hope that your membership understands exactly what is happening in this process.
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, obviously on a different client, we've dealt with issues where small businesses can't get loans despite the fact that there has been incentive money provided by the federal government. And obviously it's not exactly the same, but General Motors and other manufacturers have received a substantial amount of federal loans in order to keep their doors open. So to some extent there's an expectation that the public is going to put its credit behind a company that company has to work in accordance with the public good. I would at best be able to give you a layman's perspective on the way the banks are using the money that they receive from the federal bailout, and I don't think it would be appropriate for me to do that, especially when I'm representing General Motors here before you. But I do understand your concern, and yes, it would be best if there was a way that the money had been provided to the banks were in turn used so that we could spark our economy by allowing people to get loans to buy new cars. We completely support that.
Any other questions for Mr. Campbell? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I appreciate your comments, I think it's really, really important to, you know, protect those who are serving. I understand your role. I'm sure you're looking over your contract as well. So maybe this bill can help you in a couple of weeks. Might be of help. Corey Streisinger, head of DCBS, is in the audience. I'd like to have Ms. Streisinger come forward. I've spoken to Ms. Streisinger via email, voicemail, just to we traded some thoughts on this and wanted to get your comments on the A6 and your department's role that might be in this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and as you've indicated, the Dash A6s do have a role for the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I wanted to just comment briefly on that, and of course we share the concerns that have been expressed about the situation that's developing for some Oregon dealerships. Our concern is that we want to make sure that if there is a role for DCBS, we're able to meet the expectations that you have of our agency. And so the concern I wanted to express to you is that our agency consists of a series of dedicated funds, and we don't actually have a fund source that under current law could be used to carry out investigations under this statute. So my concern is that I want to make sure that we're not setting up a false expectation about government's role in helping businesses that may find themselves injured in this situation. And I don't have an immediate solution to put on the table, but I did want to flag for you that it would be a challenge for us to carry out investigations under this section because of the restricted nature of our funding.
And you're looking at the A6 where we took out the direction that you would necessarily have to investigate.
Yes, Senator.
Still have your tools to use at your...
We would have the tools. The challenge
but, yes,
is that
I understand.
We would not be able to use the tools without any funding to do so. And so, I mean, it would not, because it's discretionary, it would not create a requirement that we
right.
couldn't meet, but it might set an expectation
sure.
that we couldn't meet, and I wanted to flag
right.
that for you.
Well, I appreciate that, and sometimes, especially not in our fiscal environment, but also in our time involvement, sometimes there's value, as you understand, in putting the framework in place, noting the expectation on the record so that we can maybe follow up with that, but make sure that at least we have that legal framework available.
And if there's, obviously, if there's funding
yeah.
available at a future time, the ability to follow through would be there.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Dreisinger? Okay, thank you very much. Anybody else want to comment at this time? Okay. We're in work session. What I would entertain is a motion to adopt the Dash A6 amendment.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr has moved to adopt the A6 amendment to House Bill 2739. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. We will wait a fiscal on this bill, and I will carry the bill over until tomorrow's meeting. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2739. Now, we're going to go back to the top of the list and open up a work session on House Bill 3379. Colleagues, this is our kind of our omnibus transportation bill at the moment. And what I would like to do is ask Mr. Stembridge to discuss the A5, 6, 7, 8 amendments that we'll be putting in this bill. And
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3379A is the bill that allows cities to apply for extension or submit alternatives if unable to meet the transportation funding requirements when amending comprehensive plans in compliance with the transportation planning rule of the Land Conservation Development Commission. You have four amendments on this. The Dash A5 directs the Department of Transportation to evaluate Oregon Streetcar Project Fund to determine if funds are sufficient to purchase streetcars and report to the legislative interim committees on transportation by January 1st, 2010. You have the Dash A6 that changes the expiration date on quarterly farm vehicle registrations to 3 months after the issue date. You have the Dash A7, which prohibits the Oregon Transportation Commission from defining the criteria for local governments to meet funding requirements of the TPR. And you have the Dash 8, which is a referendum severability provisions for HB 2001B, which is the transportation package.
Thank you.
We don't have the paperwork, fiscal revenues on any of these amendments.
Yes. Sure. So these will be ones that we'll discuss those now and then adopt those amendments, and hopefully by tomorrow we will have some fiscals. I would like to ask any testimony on the Dash A7 amendment, which is the amendment to the current bill, where the commission, under what circumstance looking at it, was considered to meet the funding requirements. Does anybody want to illuminate on that one at all with some expertise, like maybe the League of Oregon Cities, to do us a favor, even though this is not your amendment, at least what this does?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. The A7 amendment is intended to just do one very simple thing. The bill directs OTC to adopt rules to implement the provisions of the bill. The A7 amendment simply says that that rulemaking should be limited to the provisions within the bill. The reason there has been a little bit of confusion in the discussion of this is that the Transportation Planning Rule, otherwise known as the TPR, is actually housed within the administrative rules of DLCD. This rulemaking authority is for OTC, and the definition of the specific TPR provisions should be contained within the TPR and LCDC's administrative rules. This bill, however, the TPR has some funding requirements that were purposely left very flexible in LCDC's rules to allow local governments to work in partnership with ODOT and DLCD to stimulate economic development opportunities and also provide state protecting the state investments in the transportation system. So the bill allows a process for cities, that underlying bill, that can't meet the funding requirements of the TPR to have additional flexibility And the A7 amendment simply ensures that any existing flexibility that is within the rule housed by DLCD isn't changed by the rulemaking authority in this bill for OTC.
Thank you.
That's clear as mud.
Yeah. That's what happens when, you know, people are a lot smarter about us and this stuff. But I trust you on that. Any questions for Ms. Ludwig? Okay. Anybody else would like to thank you very much. Anybody else would like to testify on the dash A7 amendment? Okay. Then I'm going to go start with the dash A5 amendment, colleagues. This is my amendment. As Mr. Stembridge mentioned, this refers to the Oregon Streetcar Project Fund that was established in 2007, and in which $20 million of lottery funds went. And there was an expectation of additional monies from the business energy tax credit, which apparently are no longer available. So what this amendment simply does is direct the department to make an evaluation whether the fund is adequate to meet our expectations, and if not, to make a recommendation to the commission as, you know, how they might complete that project. Does anybody have any questions on that? Okay, and then the dash 6A6 amendment is Senator George, and I'll let him discuss that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the state statute allows vehicles to be temporarily registered on a quarterly basis, which is on a calendar, so January 1 through December 31st, March 31st and on through by the quarters. Former state senator Gary George has some farm trucks, and he pointed this out to me, that it creates an odd situation in agriculture, which is most of agriculture doesn't work off of a quarterly basis. It works when the harvest is happening, and a lot of them just register their vehicles during the harvest period. And so what happens is that they may have a 45-day harvest, but if it overlays one of the quarters in the calendar, it means they have to buy two quarters worth of registration when they only really need a three-month registration. So the A6 amendments are a narrowly drafted amendment that says on farm vehicle registration that rather than a quarterly registration, they can get a three-month registration. And so it's meant to apply to farmers so that they can match their registration with the harvest time rather than the calendar. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you for that discussion. Any questions for Senator George about the time adjustment on the farm plate? Okay, and then, colleagues, the dash 8 amendment, A8, is a severability amendment that refers to House Bill 2001, the transportation bill that was passed out of the House this afternoon. This amendment will ensure that if any portion of the bill is referred and defeated at the polls, and the entire bill is defeated, and that is designed to keep people from cherry-picking part of the bill, for example, taking revenue out and ensuring, and then making other parts have to still exist, because this is a negotiated bill. It's all one, and this protects against that. Is there any discussion on that? Okay. What I'd like to do, we don't have fiscals. I'd like to adopt these amendments, and then we will address the bill itself tomorrow.
Mr. Chairman, the dash A5 amendments to the bill.
Senator Starr has moved the dash A5 amendment to House Bill 3379. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Move the dash A6 amendment.
Senator Starr has moved the dash A6 amendment to House Bill 3379. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Move the dash A7 amendment.
Senator Starr has moved the dash A7 amendment to House Bill 3379. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
And I move the dash A8 amendment to the bill.
Senator Starr has moved the dash A8 amendment to House Bill 3379. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay, and we will carry this bill over until tomorrow for fiscal. So I'll close the work session on House Bill 3379. Okay. Now we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 3039. Mr. Stembridge, this is our solar bill, and I will explain some things, but you can at least start us out.
Mr. Chairman, this is House Bill 3039. It directs the Public Utility Commission to establish a pilot program for each electric company to demonstrate the effectiveness of electricity delivered through solar voltaic energy systems. It has a number of other provisions. You have had a number of amendments submitted. The ones that we have distributed and shown on your summary are the dash A5, the dash A11, and an amendment that has yet to be issued by the Legislative Council. The dash A5 clarifies the wording for internal consistency, the current bill. The dash A11 is an add-on that would direct the authorized state agency to use fuel cell power to the greatest extent practicable. It directs the Department of Energy to adopt rules for the comparison of fuel cell power with other systems. And then the amendment that we are waiting for would replace the measure and would direct the PUC to develop solar power pilot program, retaining some of the provisions of the current measure.
Okay, so colleagues, this is a very fascinating bill. We've heard this. I think it's very clear to the members of the committee that it's a very interesting subject. It's important, but it needs more work. And we're basically out of time. And so I have met with Representative Reed, who carried this bill over on the House side. And what we came up with is we're going to ask that you adopt the A11 amendment that Senator Starr has. And then when we get the amendment, hopefully, by tomorrow, the bill will be returned to the pilot project that was actually the substance of House Bill 2121 with some PUC amendments to make that correct. And I will tell you, colleagues, that is clearly designed to be a placeholder to buy us some more time. We have some questions about the fiscal part. We have questions about the policy part. And I'd like to have the committee engaged in this a little longer. So the chair's intention is to move that pilot program where we don't have the general fund fiscal to the floor. And we will start meeting next week in some form to continue working on this bill. As that moves to the floor, the intent is to go to Representative Reed for non-concurrence, and hopefully by that point we will have brought people together and see if we have a bill that meets the needs of everyone. And that seems the most logical way, rather than try to rush something through in this committee that we don't have consensus on. And hopefully we can do that by then. Any questions on the methodology here? Okay. Then I think what we do, so I just don't forget, if we could adopt the dash 11.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A11 amendments to the bill.
Okay. Senator Starr has moved the dash A11 to House Bill 3039. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. We will carry this bill over till tomorrow, and hopefully we'll have the pilot program that's ready to go, and we can discuss it further at that time. Okay. Okay, let's open up a work session on House Bill 2457, the plumber bill, Mr. Stembridge. And we have a couple of things just to discuss here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that you heard last week. It allows journeyman plumber licensee to design the plumbing portion of a fire sprinkler system for installation in either residential structures. We had a request from the State Fire Marshal's office and from others to allow them to work out some wording that would help the bill go forward, and that resulted in the dash A5, which you have. It limits the design and installation of fireworks by journeyman plumbers to one or two family dwellings subject to the low-rise residential dwelling code and classified as group R3 structures. It specifies the journeyman plumber, in order to design the fire sprinkler system, must have obtained training approved by and to demonstrate the competency to the State Plumbing Board. There has been further discussion of that dash A5, and I think there are people here to talk about that.
Okay. Who would like to address the dash A5 amendment? We're told you're here. Don't tell me later. Please.
Yeah, well, we have, Chair Metzger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric McMullen, and I'm here representing the Oregon Fire Marshals Association. As you may know, as Senator Metzger indicated, or Mr. Stembridge indicated, this was a plumber bill. This is not a fire service bill, but we felt that it was important. We wanted to keep it alive because we feel it's good for the fire service. The intent of the A5 the A5 amendments were several fold, one of which was to narrow the scope of the overall bill and make it very clear that the intention was a one or two family dwelling There are some other dwellings or other buildings that fall within the scope of the residential code, such as congregate residences. That was not the intention. We wanted to make sure that the scope was limited to one or two family dwellings and only the plumbing portions. So we're talking about one type of sprinkler system, and that would be tied to the plumbing portion of the system, thus within the scope of the plumbers. We are... The A5 is also intended to include some training, some requisite training requirements into that. And we did that, and you'll see that as a part of the five. We also learned, after working more with some of our constituents at Building Codes Division, that there may have been a negative fiscal impact placed on them by that. And I'm not sure if Mr. Stembridge has provided our proposed changes. If you have copies of strikeouts, and
I can distribute that.
Yes.
This is the
okay. Okay.
So working from the A5s, one of the significant changes is the strikeout of the end of line 10 all the way through 15, and that was the training that was added as the A5. According, at a conference call this morning or this afternoon or late this morning with Building Codes Division, who indicated there was some pretty significant negative fiscal impact that we didn't intend there. And we are advised by Building Codes Division that the elimination of that language would not change the requirement. My understanding in talking to Andrea Simmons is that the plumbing board is authorized to require annual recertification training for plumbers. And that would that requirement would include could include fire sprinkler training if this bill were to pass, so that they would receive the requisite training to do the layout and install. One of the other changes you will see, their recommended changes, is the change from design to layout. This was done to help appease some of the concerns on the part of the engineers. You probably received a letter from the engineers board with some issues. The difference between design and layout is significant, and it's one of the avenues that the electrician, journeyman electricians, that allows them to lay out a fire alarm system and not be working in the field of engineering. So you will see a recommendation for the change from design to layout. And then a strike of the ORS statutes, again, that was to help appease some of the concerns on the part of the engineers. The intention of the fire service is... I want to make that very clear, and that is to help saturate the market with people who are able to design or to able to lay out and install sprinkler systems. As we have pushed for years for fire sprinkler systems in one- and two-family dwellings, one of the reoccurring themes we hear again and again is, if you have a sprinkler requirement, who's going to install them? There's not enough people out there to lay them out, design them, and install them. And so we have been working, we've been providing education, and we see this as an opportunity to also expand that field. I have three homeowners in my jurisdiction. I'm the fire marshal in McMinnville. I have three homeowners right now that are waiting for me to help them find plumbers who can install a residential sprinkler system in their home. For them, it's the most economical venue. I'm having a hard time finding plumbers who are trained to do so. And so, you know, it's clear that, that this will help that. Our intention is not to step on other trades, you know, to take away work from designers, engineers, sprinkler fitters. We're not here I'm not here to discuss that.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, yes. I wanted to point out that on line 9 of the dash A5, the word designing appears there, and that would also need to be changed in to conform with the language that these folks have talked about.
Okay, thank you. Can we have Don Addition, Andrea Simmons, come forward, State Fire Marshal and Building Codes Division? I think we'll start with Ms. Simmons, because you could talk about the fiscal that concerns that you have.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Metzger, through the chair to the committee. For the record, my name is Andrea Simmons. I'm the Acting Deputy Administrator for the Building Codes Division. The Dash 5s, as they were introduced or proposed to you today, presented a fiscal impact that we presented this morning. I'm not sure if the committee has it now, in that it requires some additional training and tracking of training that we're currently, our licensing system is not set up for. As Eric has testified earlier to you and shared with you the proposed changes that he presented with eliminating the specific requirement to track who attended a specific class from the bill would eliminate that fiscal impact and additional workload that the division had concerns. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have on this particular bill.
We don't have an official fiscal yet, so but you've submitted your information for fiscal, so can you give us an idea of what our ballpark is that the department estimates?
The ballpark was a little over $90,000. It was about a couple different positions at a half FTE apiece based on the number of plumbers and our anticipated number of people that may go through the training.
Okay.
That was 90.
Any questions for Ms. Simmons? Okay.
And Chair Metzger, members of the committee, I'm Donna Dish, policy analyst for the Office of State Fire Marshal. And we worked together this morning to reconcile the issue of the fiscal so that they would not have an impact. We have been working with the fire service, plumbers, and other constituents on this bill to make sure that we reconcile those differences.
Yeah. But have we solved it?
I'm hoping.
The elimination, as Eric proposed to you and in the strikeout of document that I believe you have before you today, the elimination of lines starting with the journeyman on line 10 through the rest of the Dash 5 amendments would actually eliminate that specific workload requirement that caused the fiscal.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Mr. Bassett, do you want to testify briefly?
Chairman, my name is Dave Bassett. I'm a registered professional engineer and also a longtime building official, 25 years more or less at Medford, 12 years Josephine County, and two stints with the State Building Codes Division, previously as deputy administrator and just recently as a special projects coordinator. So I've done my own sprinkler system in a rural house I built in my 30s in rural Josephine County. And I'm here to tell you that sprinkler systems are a good thing. They save property and they save lives. They're also more complicated than you might think. There's a portion of them that is clearly plumbing, piping at least. There's a portion that is clearly control, and there's a portion that is very much rooted in the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA 13D and 13R. And that's the component that causes me the greatest concern as an engineer, because plumbers are not normally oriented toward designing under an NFPA standard. So bottom line, I think the amendments that you're considering improve the situation, but this is like the proverbial ball of yarn. You tug here and it jumps over there. It's a more complex issue than you might think. I certainly don't want to get into the turf wars between professions, but I do want to know that as a building official, that if someone wants to do a sprinkler system, that it's properly done, that it will do the job, that it's of benefit to them as an insurance, from an insurance standpoint. I was extremely frustrated in my commercial building where I wanted to install a sprinkler system and the insurance person says, no, there'll be more damage from water damage than there is from the fire, which I took umbrage to. But this is not an easy subject, and this is probably not a real good place to work these things out. I think maybe during the off-season for the legislature that a task force might shed a lot of light on this subject, and when a bill is not really ready for prime time for the public, it's probably good to put it in abeyance and work on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bassett. Any questions, Ms. Bassett? Yes, Senator Schrader.
I just am curious, what's the qualitative difference, this language, from changing design to layout?
None that I know of. It's layout is a design thing. It's just semantics. It didn't mean anything different to me as a building official. It's a layout. It's a design. It doesn't change anything.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And, Mr. Stenberg, in our packets, we also have a memorandum from the Department of Justice on this issue. You might want to take a look at that. Okay, thank you, Mr. Bassett. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2457, and I will carry it over for possible consideration tomorrow. And I'll put up a work session on House Bill 2569. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2569 establishes consular corps registration plates for use on motor vehicles, declares an emergency, takes effect upon passage. You have the Dash A2 amendment and the Dash A4 amendment. The Dash A2 authorizes a surcharge for issuance of registration plates on behalf of nonprofit groups to be set by administrative rule. This would be administrative rule of the Oregon Transportation Commission, not less than $2.50 and not more than $16 per plate. You have the Dash A4 amendment, which authorizes nonprofit group registration plates for fallen public fire safety officers to include a decal indicating that the plates are issued to recognize fallen public safety officers.
Thank you, Mr. Stembridge.
Again, I just would mention we don't have the paperwork.
We don't have the paperwork. Mr. Renner, does this meet your expectations?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's take the amendments, and then hopefully we'll have the fiscal tomorrow.
So moving the twos and the fours?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to 2569.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2569. Any discussion? Any objection? Ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 4 amendments to 2569. Discussion? Any objection?
So ordered.
And we will carry this bill over for fiscal for tomorrow. Colleagues, just a reminder again, we have a bunch of new bills tomorrow, and we have the same, and we're going to, I'm sure, have the full time allotted. And I'll try to talk to each of you off the floor a little bit about it, but I'm going to have to be very, in order to actually hear people's bills, you know, we're going to have a maybe kind of 10 minutes of bill type of thing, and then I'll be asking you for your judgment on some of those. There's a few of these, as the ones we have today, that I think are absolutely critical, and I'm willing to take the will of the committee on the bills we have tomorrow. So we'll hear those, try to give them at least a fair understanding of it, and as you can read those in advance, that would be really helpful, so that everybody will have an opportunity before the committee to make their case. So we're going down the home stretch. With that, we're adjourned.